Okay, what kind of a committee do you need?
So, you know, I don't really,
So he's a linear thinker. So maybe not
environmentalism. Visualization.
Okay, everyone, thank you. I don't want to penalize everyone who got here on time, but thank you for coming in the rain. Our first task is to approve the agenda. I'd like a motion to approve the agenda. Thank you, Stephanie. A second. This is John, all in favor?
Aye.
Thanks very much. And anyone who read the minutes, or even if you didn't, you'd like to pretend you did. I need a motion to approve those as well. And I'm often guilty of that, by the way. Thank you very much. Second. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? I'm sorry. You're abstaining because you're here. Thank you. Okay, so Scott England is one of our new senators. He's from the School of Law, looking to place as Scott Hughes, who did retire. All right, so my Senate report. How much did I give myself? I gave myself 13 minutes, so let's see if I can do that. Could you close the door, actually, John? I just feel like maybe broadcasting everything is not the smartest thing. So I just wanted to give you a quick update toward the presentation of the Board of Regents meeting. And again, I'm sorry, I don't remember if I told you how we were going to deliver the information after we put our statement in the newspaper. It occurred to us that they wouldn't have known, and legally you can't actually accuse someone of not reading something if you don't hand it to them. So I thought, did you not read the paper that had what I said? We're fairly sure they did from the rumors we heard, but it just felt to me that the honorable thing to do was to look them in the eye and hand it to them. I know that sounds easy. It was not easy. It was actually because I did it one by one, and I did it before the meeting. I wanted to minimize the impact because I didn't want to be grandiose about it. So pretty much everyone accepted it graciously. Two of them did not. The regent for whom we spoke about accused us, and I guess me in particular, of going that way, going to the paper, not going to them. And I said, well, sir, we did try to speak to you and you weren't listening. And I said, and I thought this was the most honorable thing to do rather than reading it out loud at the meeting. The other reason I presented it at the meeting was I wanted it in their record. I didn't read it because, again, beating a dead horse is just useless, but I wanted now their assistant would have to type it up and put it in their record. And otherwise, it would have just been a cool thing we did that went into the paper and no one knew about it. And then the other regent that was not happy was the regent president, and he actually didn't want to take it. And I've been told that lawyers often don't want to hand, if you hand the paper, they're afraid. He went like this, I don't want it. I said, well, I'm offering it to you if you'd like to take it. I've given them to the other regent. So he took it. I think someone walked by that probably who saw. So anyway, he said, you politicized it. And it was hard to not laugh because I thought, wow, what have we been dealing with for the last 3 years is the politicization of this university by these regents. So I said, well, I don't think so. And then full disclosure, I guess this doesn't make me look too good. He said, you make hostile faces at Regent Clifford. And I said, well, I appreciate your perspective, sir, but that's your perspective. My faces are not hostile. Have I ever made one of you? He said, no. I said, well, maybe that's because you don't say things that are incredulous. But when he speaks, it's incredulous, and that's my incredulous face. And if I'd been smarter, I would have said, hey, we're on a borderline issue there, you're telling me I don't look good, you know, so be careful. But I wasn't that quick. So, but I will tell you, this is sad. I had my teacup and my tea, whatever, container, and every time that person spoke, I just started pouring tea. And I looked down at my tea. So I've now been made aware, my father used to tell me the same thing, that I make faces. So I'm trying to maintain the dignity of the office. So the good news, I'm sorry to make it a little light, but we have to sometimes. The good news is, I guess if they felt it was politicized, then it had an effect. in some way. And there have been some other fallouts from it, but we don't need to dwell on it now. But that's wrapping it up. Later in the meeting, I'll ask you to just note that we will put it in our record, because now we'll be in the Faculty Senate record. So as of now, it hadn't been written. So maybe we'll put it up and you can see it again, and then we'll approve it. We can do it later. I didn't ask for a change in agenda. Thank you, Rick. Honorary degree is the next subject. God, why do I give myself 13 minutes? I'll go a little faster. The Regents also had postponed approval or disapproval, at least recognizing the fact that we had gone through the process for honorary degrees for the last 5 months. So they finally did do it. President Stokes helped with that. And we are waiting for a response from the awardees. So I'm not able to talk about it now, but if they approved one or the others of them, which you who were senators last year know who they were and you who aren't, is why I have to talk cryptically, because it's confidential. Because if someone was nominated and didn't receive it, obviously that's bad publicity. And if someone, as has happened in the past, apparently with an artist out of Santa Fe, was given an award and refused it twice. So we don't want to broadcast the people unless they say they like it. So, but at least it went through. So now, as you notice, the call for honorary degrees has gone out again. And that was what was stunning our office, because it really ruins a whole process. And I know some of the Regents were questioning the validity of having a process every year. And we encourage them to realize that's great, have that conversation, but not in the middle of a process, because that is disingenuous and very disrespectful to the whole community. The Gen Ed Task Force, we have got the band back together again. The same people under Pamela Cheek are still willing to do this. And I want to just alert you to their charges, because this is very important for us. So they're going to be coordinating with Academic Affairs and the Faculty Senate Curriculum Committee, which, as you know now, we're under the process of a full merger, and that we're working on the policy language for that, and the Registrar on curriculum changes in general education and state certification. This is going to be huge this year as we strive for common course numbering. So that means every course, whether it's going to be looked at again, I think we're past that part, I'm hoping, Rick.
I think so.
But you never know what cans are open when we do this. We'll have to be re-reviewed for the numbering. So it's a procedural thing, and I guess we all want to appreciate that. So if you know people on this committee, thank them profusely, because they're doing basically the university God's work for us, those who don't want to do it. One of our senators wrote me about safety on campus, and I neglected to write her back, but I did answer her question. And I apologize to that. So there's an increased presence over overtime for police officers. Possibly they want to hire more police officers. So these are the initiatives out of the president's office. Just to go on record one more time, for me, I was not pleased that they got a 13% raise, and I said that in the newspaper because those of us in this room got 0.94 or less, so that felt a little out of line. And I questioned the veracity of the claim that they would leave and get jobs at APD. I'll get right, APD, not APS, right? Acronyms in my brain don't work sometimes. Because I thought, well, that's like me saying, you know, Juilliard has rehired me and you just need to pay me a little more. So you might want to see the letter before you pay me a little more. So safety on campus, cameras. They have purchased 7 for the most heavily trafficked areas. And I guess because of computer issues, perhaps, we were thinking about, Rick, they're not coming out until the fall sometime. But you know, Stephanie had a good point. She teaches in the School of Public Administration, which is really a department of public administration. But that's okay. We'll figure that out later. And they come out at work at 9:30 at night. And I was thinking, Provost, maybe we should notify you of the classes that get out late. And APD should have a presence when those people are coming out. That seems like a doable task. You know, if they're just roaming, maybe they could roam in that particular area. That was just a thought I had. And then we have a broader camera initiative. We're putting on an RPSP for capital outlay money for $3 million. And that would put cameras in every parking lot. And I think we'll all feel better about that. You know, we have the highest auto theft in the nation on both in this campus, I think, and in Albuquerque. Okay, I'm hurrying. Academics Within Borders. We picked a town. Did I tell you last time? Farmington. Yeah, well, I told HSC. I can never tell who I told. So we are going to, I'm working with, ironically enough, we have a good relationship with ex-former Regent President Jack Fortner. And so he is helping us align with the mayor and possibly the president of the college there and other organizations. And the people working with me now, so my college, Anderson, with the dean and with Brian Gillespie, he had presented before, School of Architecture and Planning with Tim Castillo, and HSC to be determined. Coffey Brown, who was a senator with us last year, wants to go on the road with us to recruit, and I see this, by the way, as a viable recruiting tool. The provost will probably talk about the need for each of us to recruit. My specialty, Scott, where are you? our team, musicians, in other words, we have to recruit. We go to other countries and we bring people back. So that, I think, is what is incumbent on all of us to learn a new skill. How do we bring people into the University of New Mexico? And how do we show them what we need? So this bus is one, I'm talking about the Academics Within Borders bus. How do we reach out, not only to tell people, hey, we're a great place, but you want to be involved with us? And inspirationally, Coffee wants to come and say, hey, you know, you can be a doctor. Let's reach out to kids and let them know that this is the university to go to. So I see that just as a win-win on all sides. So the provost's office is supporting the bus, and the president's office is, she and I decided on Farmington as the place. I'm on the provost search committee. I'm not going to talk about that now because we have an unprecedented opportunity today to have the search committee with us. They usually meet with the leaders of governments, and I said, look, if you're here this day, meet with all our people. So I did write you last night in hopes you would think about what issues you'd like. I want to say characteristics as well as qualifications, right? Because not only do we want someone with a certain skill set, we want someone with, maybe I shouldn't say the word personality, a characteristic set that will, then you fill in the blank. I don't want to talk for you long. In danger, I don't want to step on the provost's toes, but I maybe you will ask me about this. You know, you've read in the paper enrollment is down by 7.5%, and that's left a $10 million deficit for the university. This is why the recruiting of income is so important. And as Jessica Dyer reported the other day, there's 18% down in the freshman class. It isn't as dire as it sounds in a way. It's about a 57 student percent drop, but it doesn't look good. So I'm hoping, and I believe the president and provost share this, it's about time as really, I don't want to sound like a cheerleader, as the great university of the state, that we start acting like it, and that somehow we spread that message. So I don't know, maybe I'm preaching to people who already know that, but I would value brainstorming, and please write and call me or text me. How can we do this? How can we get out of this rut of being number 2 or 10 or whatever, you know, people think we are, when truly we are the very high Hispanic research university, and there are only 10 in the whole country that are a combination of HSI and very high research. So we should be proud about that, and we need to get the word out. And some of the things we're thinking about on the budget leadership team are long-term strategies. So not only I lead to the provost, the budgetary decisions, how do we handle this, but how do we plan for, how do I say, creating a value proposition that students can relate to. Does that make sense? So that they understand going to college is not only necessary, it's integral. This is the place to go, and we're the place to help you get there. So my cheerleading is done. Almost done, 2 more bullet points. Where am I on my 13 minutes? Probably past.
You're past.
I'm always a little late, I'm sorry, President.
I'm often late.
You have a good reason though. I just talked too much. Governmental Relations Committee. Did everyone get what I sent out last Wednesday? Governmental Relations Committee, it's a competition. I don't want to make light of this, but last year, when I announced it in this group and sent something out, only 3 groups applied, and the College of Pharmacy got $88,000. And if I look prideful, I kind of am, because it may be the most important thing we've ever done. We got $88,000 for one of our colleagues. So there's only one who's going to win, and the Governmental Relations Committee will make that decision. We'll pass it on to the president, the provost, and if it, you know, passes muster, this person could be eligible for capital outlay up to $100,000. So even if you don't want to do it, remember why you're here, your constituent support, your whole department, your whole college, whatever it is. So this is an amazing opportunity. The Governmental Relations Committee does not want to sit in a room and read one proposal. You know, that's hardly a competitive process. All right, I talked about the BLT already, and I think I'm good. I think I've done everything. Oh, I was asked to speak about something, and I knew I'd forget this. So I have mixed feelings about symbolic gestures, but there is something from the Lobo Respect Office, Lisa Lindquist, paint the campus purple, and they wish that we would all wear purple. On Thursday, and I will read what it says, wear purple to show your support for those affected by domestic, dating, and intimate partner violence. So do as you feel, but I'm passing it on to you. So purple, if you own any purple.
Yeah,
I know. Awesome. I'll look for something, because I've got a plethora of purple, apparently. Okay, thanks. Any questions on my report before we move on? Thoughts, questions? No? You good? All right, thank you. President Stokes, okay. The floor is yours.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. I just poured my eye out.
Yes.
And so I think attendance is probably less than normal. I Debbie didn't know this happened in Mexico, but our office opened down in the fall. So what a shock. I do want to keep this brief. You know, obviously, I don't know, last week I feel like I did nothing to see in board meetings because we do have a lot of governance and there's lots of subcommittees. I mean, I'm just astonished by how much time I spend in meetings. I hope you don't feel the same. Maybe you do. Wow.
I do.
Oh, my. So, you know, I think Pamela touched on the fact that we're having to focus on enrollment, and so we, you know, have this enrollment task force, and I'm grateful for the leadership. And in Pamela's promotion of some of the issues around our enrollment challenges, that will certainly be a big focus of mine going forward. We are probably also already aware that campus safety is a big issue as well. So I do hope to get out an announcement very soon about a task force focused on issues surrounding campus safety. I want faculty, staff, and student involvement. And so I'm really in my office, we're working on it right now, and so I hope to have something.
I did mention your initiatives already.
Thank you.
And the one thing I just want to say in front of you, I said in front of the provost,
right,
is some classes finish late.
I've been hearing about
And
this.
It would be really neat if we could say, hey, at 9:30, the School of Public Administration is finishing, could some police be there?
You know, I think that
be
would
nice?
Be good to actually know, have that
yes,
information,
the schedule.
Be able to share it.
Right.
So very much.
Maybe we could
I know
work
they
on
would
that.
Welcome that kind of information. So, all right, that sounds really good. I think you've probably seen that we're launching this Grand Challenges Initiative, and so I think they'll go out before very long, an actual launch date. I don't think that's exactly public yet.
I haven't heard it.
Okay. It should be public shortly, and we'll be looking for broad participation in that. I don't even remember for sure what the date is, or I'd go ahead and tell you what it is. But there should be something coming out about that very soon. You know, lots of search is going on now. So today you're aware, and Pamela has already mentioned the provost search. Also the vice president for diversity, inclusion, equity, that search is being launched, and there are opportunities to weigh in on that tomorrow with the search firm. And then it's not, you're not yet aware of this, but the vice president, the executive vice president for finance administration, that search committee's been formed, and that search will have the search firm on campus, and you'll get the information about this later. The date that we've set is November 6th, so I'm expecting that that's the date when we'll have a similar process for the search for finance and administration. And then I thought I would just briefly share with you, at last week's Board of Regents meeting, one of the things that happened in executive session is that when I became president and in my contract, it was listed that some performance goals for me would be set, and that we've taken a little longer than expected to figure out what those performance goals are. And then they are the ways in which I end up evaluated as president. And so I thought I'd just mention what some of these things are. I suspect some of it's going to end up in the paper because I think Jessica Dyer has perhaps asked for this document. And I thought, well, you should certainly know about it before it ends up in the paper. Isn't that a nice change to actually get some information before you read it? And I will say, having looked at goals for other presidents, you know, these are things that no president is ever able to do alone, I will just say. I mean, what a president gets charged with is really working with so many different campus constituents and leaders to accomplish particular things. So the first one is build a strong and transparent relationship with the Board of Regents. And there are some things there, and of course I've got a really interesting circumstance as a president because I'm going to have a whole new set of regents, pretty much, to build a strong and transparent relationship with starting next year. But, you know, that's obviously an important part of my job is to build those relationships. The second one is to build foundational relationships with key constituencies that support the university's strategic directions. And so under this broad broad area are issues around engaging the faculty, the staff, and the students, and the alumni, engaging federal, state, and local government officials, engaging state and local business leaders, continuing to strengthen and sharpen our brand identity as UNM, and increasing our visibility, and then proposing to the regents an annual 360-degree performance review process to identify areas of strength and areas of development of me as the president. So I thought you'd be interested to know that we'll be doing that, because that is the kind of process in which you would be involved, and it's something that we would hope to do annually. So that's number two. The third is establish a process and plan to create a new strategic direction for the university that sets the course for beyond 2020. And of course, 2020 is the end of our current strategic plan. So sometime in the next few weeks, I'll need to establish a process by which we begin the strategic planning. And what I've been charged with is appointing and working with a committee to engage the community in having a strategic plan completed by the end of 2019.
Nice.
So
get going.
We got some work to do. And there's more to it than that. There are some key things under that particular area. Achieving a campus climate of inclusiveness and respect, reducing sexual violence. There are things in here about the veteran-friendly campus, but those are all part of the third broad goal. The fourth one is achieving enrollment management targets. So under that, there are some specific enrollment targets that I've been asked to pursue, and they of course all fall in line with needing to increase enrollment anyway. The fifth broad goal is strengthening the financial position of the university. So sustaining a transparent budget process, developing a multi-year budget planning process, evaluating alternative revenue allocation models, achieving new efficiencies, ensuring our capital projects are advanced and on time, increasing fundraising. So fundraising is a big part of the president's job, although it's a tiny little part right here. And then stabilizing the financial future of UNM athletics. They're all part of that broad goal. The sixth is advancing academic goals, and this is really focused on student retention rates and increasing the visibility and vibrancy of an honors program, developing an approach for assessing academic growth and adult competencies of our graduates. And so some of this, there's going to be a lot of detail behind it, but thought I would share that this is listed. The seventh broad category is strengthening research and economic development, establishing a comprehensive research strategic plan for main campus and health sciences. So you're going to hear me constantly focused on building these bridges between health sciences and main campus. We have to have our goals all together as UNM, as one university, and so that's clearly here under research and economic development. Increasing external research funding and strategic and interdisciplinary initiatives. A lot of this involves the STC.UNM. And then the final area is advancing health sciences and hospital operations. So a lot of these are things that are going on within health sciences, but I oversee those, and so there are quite a few specifics here. Of course, I'm happy to share this with everyone. And then, recognizing that in the first year, it's so much of what I'm really charged with doing, I can't have a huge impact on those areas in the first year. So there's a separate little document that basically mentions that part of my contract, and I'm not sure the extent to which everyone has really seen my contract. I mean, it probably is out there, but it includes the potential for an incentive for meeting performance goals. And so it basically specifies that that the board will look at my performance in the areas of how well I've built relationships with the regents, how well I've advanced academic goals, how well I've built foundational relationships, and how well I've met financial targets in deciding what, if any, performance incentive I might earn. So I wonder, you might not even be aware that the part of my contract involved a performance incentive. And I'm happy to always talk about things like that. You know, it's not something that's built into everyone's contract by far. It's kind of standard in many presidents' contracts. So, anyway, I wanted you to be aware
of it. Yeah, we don't have that, definitely.
I know.
Some of us do at the agency.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I just want to say, how successful we were in making this all happen. Because this is like quite a mess.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we can do one of those things, maybe.
Yeah, so it is.
Kudos to you.
I was wondering when this evaluation of you happens.
Right. Because they just gave it to you now, and you're here a year in March.
I'll be here a year in March, and you know, probably what would be really good is if we could get some kind of 360 together that could be given out on campus and to various constituents following a year. So it does seem to me that there'd be value to getting something like this out, ready and out before the end of spring semester. That's really my thinking about it. I think it's possible, knowing how things go and how much work goes into putting some of this together, that it might end up having to be done early fall semester as opposed to end of spring semester. But I do think early feedback is good for a leader. And so, you know, I would aim for end of spring semester with the possibility of it, end up being early fall. If you have thoughts one way or the other about it, you know, I'm happy to.
Yeah, what does everyone think about that? I see both sides. Ross, what do you got?
So I'm curious, this is kind of quite long list, right? Is there a priority, like what come, for example, increasing the enrollment, how much it constitutes of your overall performance? 30%, 50%, what is?
So I think, you know, this was a very big step for the regents to actually get
quantify it.
This much detail about what I should be focused on. So they haven't gotten it down yet to the level of what proportion of my time should be devoted to this or that. I think that the regents in voting on accepting this recognized that this would evolve over time. So, you know, it's, and then some of these, how well do you quantify them? So building relationships with the regents. Clearly the regents are gonna make a judgment call as to how well I did that. And others will, in other contexts, make that. So it's unclear. A president's job does involve focusing on a lot of different things. And given its impact on our budget, the enrollment and the student success and whatever it is that allows us to improve our enrollment picture will have to be a major focus for me, just because the implications are clear. So some of that I'll focus on the campus safety, because that's a component of what we're dealing with on the enrollment side. So you can be sure I'll be focused there. But I also, I'm really committed to the research growth too, and I'm excited about the grant challenges. So, you know, it's all evolving.
Yeah, and there's some you're on now,
yeah.
Clearly.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yes.
But based on what Pamela said, actually,
yeah.
It can go against you in this scenario, because if it's not clear, what if they come back and say, hey, you didn't perform the job, because it's very vague.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us, we want to know, like, if there is some way to make it a little quantified, because we all want you to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yes.
I'm glad that you have recognized campus safety as part of that overall student success, and I know you're aware of
Right.
The branch libraries close at 9 p.m, but Zimmerman's opens at 2 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that they're aware of all things.
So you like the idea of looking into meeting classes when they come out and
being around? Yeah, and just around the libraries.
Yeah.
In general. I'm not sure what's going to happen.
Right.
There's a lot of conversation.
Okay. Someone else raise their hand over there? Yeah, Jason.
I'm Jason Moby, Foreign Languages. I appreciate that you have criteria now to kind of know how you're doing, but I'm really concerned at how vague they are, and I'm wondering what your sense is. Are those going to be the criteria going forward? Regions change, do you think you'll have a chance to give some feedback about adopting policies that are more clear so that you can really succeed instead of not knowing exactly what to do?
So I think once you look at all of these, you'll see that under some of them are some very specific things that need to happen. They want, you know, some things that we know that we know are being worked on right now, and they just want to be sure that I'm aware that I need to make sure they happen. I think that these are not unusual areas for a president to be charged when you're at a major research institution. There's going to be an expectation that I pay attention to everything that's listed here in the broad categories. We'll see how metric-driven new regents are.
Mm-hmm.
I was pleased that they very clearly state on the section that's focused on whether on how I might earn the incentive. That I can't possibly have an impact in all of these areas in 1 year. And so they limited it to a subset. And so that leaves me feeling pretty comfortable with what this looks like, at least in a first year.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that part of what I'm charged with is I don't do all, like I said, there is a president does not do this work alone.
Mm-hmm.
It really is about making sure that leaders are focused in the areas that I need them focused in. And that's my, what I'm, specifically charged with.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they just want to see movement and improvement in all
across
of those areas.
Uh-huh.
I just had a question about whether or not the regents discuss any values that undergird these performance criteria. So I'm thinking about things like diversity, equity, and inclusion, community engagement. Did they specify? I know you care passionately about those things, but I'm just wondering if they're thinking about them.
So I wouldn't say that we our conversations about this were detailed. I worked with one region in particular who's very committed to specifying metrics, and that regent, Regent Hosmer, he is very much aware, and if you look at some specifics, you'll see that some of this is reflected, but the conversation with all the regents didn't last long enough for us to get into real detail. I think, some regents were not as interested in a lot of the details.
Mm-hmm.
Not because they weren't sure how they would actually get measured. So I have been very clear about that as a passion of mine, and so, you'll see it in some of the specifics.
Mm-hmm. Other questions on another topic, perhaps?
Yeah.
Anything else? Yeah, go ahead,
Roger.
Yeah, that's a different thing.
So your performance evaluation has an incentive performance incentive. But I think most of the people who will be doing those things to you I don't think they have performance incentive, but UVP doesn't have performance incentive. So shouldn't there be some incentive for those people to kind of see?
Well, it is interesting, because that's really one of the reasons I discovered after I got here, that that is one of the reasons why people react negatively to these incentive payments to presidents. So it is the fact that other people are the reason why they're the ones working toward success in some of these areas. You know, I don't think the universities have embraced that, you know, pay for performance or incentive pay as a way of compensating people at most levels. It exists in some areas of the academic of universities, but not most areas. You know, I think, you know, this campus can you know, think about compensation and what are best practices. I hesitate to say people should get all this incentive pay. It ends up being targeted toward leaders, which further creates discrepancies between the pay of leaders and the pay of everyone on campus who's really here contributing to the success of the whole institution. So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know,
I like your spirit of equality, but I think you may be the first senator who just voted for a pay raise for VPs. Because for years we've been voting against that.
You have to understand, I came from business school.
Yeah, a little bit.
I strongly believe in performance incentive because these are higher level, and our fate, in a way, is tied to those people's performance.
But I would like to take a vote. I'd like to go on record for the other part of the faculty that says we need compensation for the faculty. So that's I'm just going to vote for that.
Sure.
Anyone else? Yeah, Lee.
On the HSC side, incentives are rampant. In fact, there's a School of Medicine official policy about incentives and how they're written and implemented. And in my particular department, internal medicine, virtually every division, every foot shoulder in every division has its part of an incentive plan. Yeah. So it's not something unknown to this university, it's just sort of a
it's more of a North health versus science South not main.
We don't have it on our side.
I think the other thing though is I think sometimes even on the health sciences side, we use incentives in ways that are not always clear, and certainly not across departments. And I also think it is a way that base salaries are kept lower and non-competitive, so we share that with the main campus side. So they're definitely a two-edged sword, and they're quite sharp. And so I think, because there has been times when the incentives that are added to the base salary have said, oh, well, you're at the 25th percentile, when you look at the base, and pretty close. So, I mean, I appreciate business school, but I also appreciate that I think, you know, we have so little money to try to stretch so far and continue to recruit, because that's another challenge I believe we face as a university is, how do we continue to recruit and retain top-notch researchers when they can do the exact same project at Chapel Hill for $45,000?
I hear you. I'm gonna have to pause because we're about 15 minutes late now, but thank you, President. You ran over, that's okay. It's better you than anyone. Thank you so much, appreciate
you.
It. You're welcome. Oh, by the way, there's coffee, really good coffee, apparently, and sweets backstage if you just want to grab one.
Really good treats, by the way. Thank you.
Actually, Selena Salazar, full credit. Someone in our office met someone and figured out it was cheaper than going through UNM. So if you need that, go to
So last couple months, I've been who's wrong, kind of talked at you a little fast about a whole lot of things going on. I thought I'd shift gears entirely to say one thing that's completely not about the provost's office, if that's in this last question, and then just have a conversation with whatever you all would like to talk through. But one thing I would add to this last conversation about incentive pay is really new research out of economics. I'm not an economist, but I think some of this stuff. It says the trouble with incentive pay, at least in some settings, is it actually crowds out the deep moral reasons that, some, that people commit to what they do. So I suspect a lot of you are here for deep moral reasons having to do with education and our students and research and the mission. And there is some really interesting work these days on the way that we can start rewarding people financially for what they're already doing because they're so deeply committed. You actually reduce all those other reasons for doing it. So there can be very negative impacts. It's interesting. Other than that, I told you about all the stuff going on in the provost's office before. There's all that stuff going on, plus the budget crisis, plus the enrollment task force. I'd rather just talk about whatever you all would like to talk to.
Questions for the provost? Yes, John.
Hey, John Wilson, an engineer. Last time we talked about the diminishing enrollment, and you gave one snippet of what may be causing it. If you delve into it and ask why five times, and find out what the cause was,
So I'm a sociologist. There is no one cause in this case. Sometimes there is. In this case, our research says there is no one cause. The two big ones are clearly the improving economy in the state. Other states' economies improved much more quickly, and they saw enrollment fall earlier. New Mexico's economy lagged, and so we saw the fall later and all at once.
Just to be clear, people are going back to work often instead of coming to college.
The job market's better, so especially young men, but also young women are going to the job market instead of coming to college. That's probably the biggest single factor. New Mexico demographics are also a big part of it. We just fall in demographics for the traditional age of college students. That hurts a lot. Additional things are the perception of campus safety and Albuquerque safety, especially from outside the city, is big. I haven't been through this list in my own mind.
A lot of it was they got better scholarships at NMSU, right, who put forward $5 million worth of scholarships, but here's the rub.
They can sustain
But they all, not only can they not sustain it, they lowered their acceptance rate. So their ACT, they went down to 21, and ours is currently at 25. So the question is, what kind of school do we want to be? And that's the discussion, right?
Yeah.
Partly.
And another piece of it is there's been a 20 or 30 year campaign to discredit public institutions generally, and recently that's really hit public higher ed in particular. And the survey data on this is really clear. Attitudes in New Mexico, if you ask New Mexicans, is it crucial that, is higher education crucial for long-term success in life? The support for that statement has just plummeted for the last few years. That's huge. Right? That attitude, is it worth coming to college? And it's all the data that's doing. We don't think that the residential requirement on campus is a significant factor. We thought it might be in the research.
They interviewed, it's not an exit interview, people who were accepted and were not choosing to come here, and that was about 115 people. So it's not a huge number, but it's a sample. Yes, Matt. John, Matthew, sorry.
Just a simple question in some sense. It was an earlier question. It's a public institution, as you know, one of our goals is to meet New Mexico. So what are New Mexico? I mean, is that clear? Are we making it clear to the populace? Are we making it clear how we? I truly don't know. I just enjoy being with this. But seriously.
No pay raise for you, Tom.
And pointing out that these needs are not met, except in some cases,
My quick answer, there's huge range of needs, some of which we are and should be engaged in meeting, and some of it is just not being dealt, right? CNN just announced a new law enforcement academy, right? You know, that's the kind of direct job training. I don't think we should have been out in front of that one, right? That's their job, not ours. Where our sweet spot is creating the next, my view. And some particular, front end healthcare workers, some of that stuff, absolutely, that's us. But more generally, it's creating the kind of creative knowledge workers, whether it's in engineering and physics, in the new economy, or in the fine arts, or in the business, the kind of well-educated creative leaders who can meet this need. We have forever been a colony of the American nation state, completely dependent on federal fiscal flows or on the carbon economy. And until we get independent of those two things, we're always going to be number 50 on a lot of those things because those things fluctuate so badly. The escape route out of that is a private sector economy, I suspect, built on new knowledge kinds of stuff and the fine arts and tourism. And we, this is about humanities, fine arts, technology. It's what a research university does, and that's our strength.
Right. Next, Lee, and then Stefan.
Two questions. What is, given the lottery scholarship, what is the average student debt, or at least the range or median?
In New Mexico, it's lower than that. Okay. Nationally, it's 20 or 30. In New Mexico, it's actually on the low end.
Yeah.
But of course, our students' economic resources are on the low end. So our view is we don't have a crisis on this terrain, but we do have a problem that in the New Mexico economy as it exists now, our students have a hard time paying off those loans.
Do you have a figure?
I don't, in my head. We do. We've done a bunch of that. I don't know that off the top.
So, and the second question is, I read, I think it might have been Eastern New Mexico University, I'm not sure, a huge increase in enrollment.
New Mexico Tech, 25%, NMSU, 12%.
So why are they doing this?
In New Mexico State is the closest parallel to us. That's just a false positive. They cratered over the last few years, and so they're building off a very, very low base. So I wouldn't take that as a serious data point. And part of it is they're offering big scholarships to people with 21 ACT score. We're just not going to go there. That would lower our graduation rates. I do want to add one piece to the last point. The other big need in New Mexico, like the country, we face a crisis of historic proportions about where this country's going, inequality and race relations. The other sweet spot for us is, I think, creating a generation of leaders who really are comfortable, whatever their own background, right, whatever racial, ethnically, otherwise, whatever, are comfortable and have an appetite for collaborative leadership across all those boundaries and a shared future in this country. If we're not producing that generation of leaders in Mexico, whether it's in physics or economics or social science or humanities, we're failing fundamental challenge of our time.
Great. No, Stefan, sorry, Rashi.
So we do a fair bit of polling. Gabe Sanchez in the back does a lot of particular polling on politics. I just want to tell you, I don't think the answer is to go out and ask New Mexico who they want us to be. I just think that's the wrong approach. We are the academy. The faculty need to come together, think about how we meet these challenging ways that really address what New Mexico needs. Yeah, we need to listen to the populace about what they want, but most of the populace doesn't know what a research university is. Why do we think they have the expertise to tell us what we need to be? The political system is what really does that. The way we learn what they want is they elect governors who appoint regents. You know what I think about how that's working. I'm not sure polling will give us that answer.
Follow up, Stefan. Come on, I got a lot of people, so make it quick. Okay, thanks for that point. Rebecca.
I just want to say to that point, Grant Stokes just did go on a listening tour across New Mexico and heard all that. And I've never heard of a past president ever going on a listening tour. I think it's like, you know, specifically female, but I thought it was quite brilliant. And I did hear you last meeting that you want to create the leaders of the future, and I think I'm really, you know, believe in that.
Resonates, yeah. Okay, great. Gabriel, you're not a senator. Let me finish my senators first. Sorry. 70.
Yeah, I just want to say thank you for sharing your slides that you presented to the Board of Regents on the salary situation. I thought they were really clear and positioned that really well, and just appreciate the transparency.
And just so you know, we are taking some heat for that.
Yeah, oh, a lot, actually. Brandy. Mm-hmm.
So how about competition from other regional institutions like Arizona State, Colorado mm-hmm. State, which I know have been quite aggressive in coming after New Mexico students?
Yeah, that should have been on my list, too, for sure. And it's especially regional, mm-hmm. and it's especially for the highest performing high school students. Mm-hmm. That's what Arizona State's especially big market on that. But mm-hmm. you know, what's interesting is that's an expensive option for students.
Mm-hmm.
But some of those students can afford it and are going.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the project, building up our own honors college, which is not, the project is creating an honors college that really is linked up with all of your programs much more fully so we can compete for those
mm-hmm.
We're getting fish for high-performing Hispanic, Native American, Anglo, and other students. Mm-hmm. That's what where we're being targeted, because mm-hmm. everybody wants it.
Well, and I know some of these other institutions, like their real high-caliber faculty will be engaged in recruiting, you know, calling the students, and these are the classes I teach, and what you can do in my lab, and have we thought about that?
We may need to step up again.
Sorry, guys, I'm going to cut it short just to get two more people. Mark, because we're running late. Yeah.
Basic question. What is the relationship with high school counselors, especially in Howard? Are we spending a lot of time with them?
And possibly not enough. Mm-hmm. We have recruiters who go out and spend time in high schools. I'm going to put out a call for faculty who are interested in engaging
music
in
does
high schools.
We do this.
You do?
Music,
okay, music does.
We do.
Okay.
This.
We do.
As an institution, we have enrollment folks out there hitting the high schools, but are we doing it with counselors or not? And by the way, I raise kids in public schools here. I'm not sure the quality of high school academic counseling is for them.
Okay, final question. I'm going to get one more. Who hasn't had one yet? Arlie, you haven't had one. Sorry.
Just in response, Richard, to put that this theme here of enrollments, we have been promising programs to the Native American community, some of the rural Hispanic communities for a very long time. It would always reach a level in the discussion of finance and then it would fall apart. And this has been a phenomenon that we've seen year after year after year. In the last 2 years, we've had the Kellogg Foundation put the money there, and we have, if I do say so, we have a spectacular program, both a doctoral and a master's program that's being delivered. These are people who are very high-performing Native American students, and it's working. As opposed to be very blunt about this, as opposed to the enrollments in primary and secondary education, even as those are going down, leadership forces the programs we offer have been going up and up and up. And so I think that model offers an insight into a way to move forward in other areas.
Any thoughts? Are you good with
that? Just yes, and beware of localized knowledge. You know about that because you're in College of Ed. Just know there's other incredibly exciting stuff going on in the College of Engineering out in rural New Mexico in the reservations. There's stuff going on to medical school out there. There's more of that at UNM than you realize when you're in a particular unit. But we need to up our game and do much better.
And I think we should really engage the faculty on this one. This could be useful. Okay, if anyone has a question that they're dying to ask, they can first. I'm going to stop unless we good, can we? Just because we have a lot to do in the search room, so we get about 5 minutes.
Finny,
sorry.
So, in shaping the incoming freshman class, that's a two-part process, or actually a multi-part process. And I'm thinking about what our strategy is for spring admissions and to what degree that'll help ameliorate some of the problems from the shortfall in the fall.
We are hitting the ground very hard trying to recruit for spring, but just the numbers are always so much lower. It's hard to make a dent in the big recruitment shortfall we had this fall. So we're not making overly rosy assumptions about spring enrollments in terms of rebuilding. We're making realistic things about what we think we can do, and then really addressing the big numbers that come in the fall. the stuff that the Faculty Senate's working on, getting out into New Mexico, helping recruit. We're doubling down on some recruitment stuff, out of enrollment management. But nothing we do in the spring can make up for the shortfall. The numbers.
What were the actual numbers? What were the numbers?
The freshman class,
it's
I've not seen them.
It's down 18%. It's about 57 students.
So nothing I've seen officially has quoted a number that high.
The newspaper quoted Terry.
Did,
yeah.
The highest number I've seen officially internally was 15% fall in freshman enrollment.
Yeah, I did hear 18 when I was with Terry, so it could be, you know, a misnomer. But okay, Gabriel, I'm sorry I didn't get to you, but you're going to have your own time. Thank you so much, Provost
okay.
Wood. Welcome to stay.
Thank
course.
You all. I should not, in case I decide to apply for the future role, I should not be in.
Oh, we're not even there. We got a few more things, but please
okay.
do get out.
Okay.
Just in case we might
That's
want
good.
You.
Thank you all.
All right, and have a treat if you want on your way out. Okay, all right, Finney, you got 1 minute.
This comes as a motion from Ops. We don't have a second for our updated committee rosters.
Appointments. Yeah.
Appointments.
Second, thank you, Stephanie. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed?
Stay.
Merci. All right, so Rick, just to be formal, why don't you post our response up there? It's not a voting action. It's just so it will go on the Senate record. This is what I presented. Well,
Sorry.
Not that is not what I presented, but soon will be what we presented to the Regents at the last BOR last week. We actually, it's not an action item. It'll just go on the record now that we've done it.
Accept the report.
No, we didn't put that. Rick said it could go on the report without it. We voted on it last time,
yeah.
But you never saw it. So
Sorry.
No use in redundant
okay.
voting, right? But thank you. So yeah, just showing you, and now it'll be in our history, and it's past us now. And then it's signed, blah, 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 the end. Yeah, that's it. Thank you. And that's what they got a hard copy of that I initialed. We treated it as a memo, not a letter. All right. Now, Gabriel, Rob, please come up. I'm sorry that we're a little late today. Gabriel Sanchez is our director of Center for Health Policy. Is that your title, executive director?
Formerly RWJF Center for Health Policy, part of the agenda. We named to you
right.
Center for Social Policy.
Great. And Rob Del Campo is our interim dean of the University College and the head of the
Innovation
Academy. Thank you. Everyone has long titles. And they've got three things to talk to us about today. So, yes, thank you.
So I'll be brief knowing you have a packed agenda. So part of the new policy is for the Faculty Senate to actually review renames of centers or institutes at UNM or brand new initiatives that are centers of institutes. So as noted just in my title, formerly the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Center for Health Policy just went through a rename. Now we're titled UNM Center for Social Policy. 10-year RWJ grant came to an end, and so part of the policy is to come before you and talk a little bit about what our center does. Long story short, it is continuing the mission of training PhD students in applied policy. So we have a fellowship program that puts students at the PhD level in social sciences, broadly defined as social policy research. And within that brand of UNM Center for Social Policy, there's a number of institutes that live beneath that brand. A couple of those fall within this policy. Center for Education Policy Research recently went through a rename. Now they're Cradle to Career Policy Institute. So that would be underneath that new initiative to go before the Faculty Senate. And two brand new initiatives. One is the Kellogg-funded Native American Budget and Policy Institute. So that's a brand new entity that, again, falls under that policy for you folks to vet. And another one that's brand new, well, my colleague Rob Del Campo and I are part of, that's the UNM Compassion Institute that will have a PhD fellowship with that to train students across the institution, both Health Sciences Center and main campus that have an underlying interest in compassion. It could be in any discipline as long as they can frame their research agenda to advance compassion. That is a brand new entity.
Gabriel, I'd like to talk a little bit about the third one separately. I
sure.
just checked with my advisors and I'm able to combine the first two. They're simply a name change. I think you might want to spend a little more time on the third one. Everyone in favorable of, do I need a motion for that? Or
to combine them,
to
yes.
To combine. So may I have a motion to combine the first two, which are name changes? Thank you, Gordita. Second? Great. Fabulous. So, any discussion on the name changes? Yes, Stefan.
Just for historical record, the definition of the UNM, there's no definition of the work that traditional times,
Yeah, a number of grants, a couple from the Kellogg Foundation, a couple from National Institute of Health, and a number of contract projects. So part of our kind of rebrand into a broader than health policy, social policy was largely at increasing the opportunity to bring in new funding. And a lot of that is contract research. So you might take a contract from Office of Superintendent of Health Insurance, for example. And so they have a scope of work that we actually conduct in terms of research. What we try to do is integrate PhD students into those contracts. They learn how to do applied research and also provides them with funding. So that, in essence, is kind of how we sustain the mission without the big funding from Robin Wood Johnson.
Other comments? So I'd like to move from you all, motion please, to approve the name changes in number 8 and number 9. I won't read them out loud. You can see them yourselves. Do I have a motion? Oh, I guess we did this. Sorry, I am redundant, but it better in this case to be over redundant. All in favor of the name change? Any opposed? Any abstentions? Great, thank you. So that passes easily. Now, sorry, I slow you down a little. I didn't want you to rush through the whole action and compassion thing. Let's, you know, the new one.
You want me to also talk about native budget policies too? Or
oh, compassion? That's what I just, oh, you went that one.
It's already passed.
Yes, sorry. Oh, that's unfortunate.
It works well for me.
That does work fast. This is my fault because I was multitasking and I need to stop doing that. That is not what I intended. And I'd like to have some integrity with my intention, but that passed, so maybe my intention is secondary to what actually happened. Does anyone have any problem with the fact that we just approved number 10? Because I said number 8 and number 9. Rick, give me advice here.
The motion was for 8 and 9.
The motion was for 8 and 9. Yeah, the motion was for 8 and 9. So we yes, we're good with those two. So now talk a little bit more about the Compassion Institute.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Compassion Institute, and I'll let my colleague fill in any gaps that I might leave. Long story short of it is, it's a brand new initiative that's actually global, that has components in a lot of different regions of the world, all with the same underlying mission to train a new generation of leaders that really have a focus on promoting compassion across whatever avenue of study that they intend to pursue. Upside for UNM, if again this passes, is the home institution for all of the U.S. hub of activities across compassion would be here at the University of New Mexico. So in addition to the fellowship piece, which Rob and I have been actually working on for the last, 3 years, trying to bring in the funding for that, court all that process, very recently the agenda shifted to have actually infrastructure around those PhD students so that there'd be an actual institute focused on compassion that would ideally engage faculty here at UNM in that research along with the PhD students and hopefully allow this to become bigger than just a fellowship program. So it is at that point where we saw, okay, this is actually becoming potentially a full-blown institute that we wanted to put this on the agenda and come before you for formal approval.
We're operating under, when we first undertook the, at least looking at if there was interest in funding something like this, we talked with the research policy subcommittee, when Dave Hansen was in charge.
He still is?
Okay, good. And you know, just want to make sure. We got to go ahead to continue to look at this in a preliminary fashion, so we've been trying to keep it above board the whole time. It'll be externally funded. Right now we have funding for 3 doctoral students for 4 years, sort of full boat, which will also include some funding for them to travel to an interdisciplinary conference each summer where they'll work with scholars from the other universities. These 3 scholarships will be for UNM students selected by UNM faculty. We have the entire, you know, autonomy to do all of those things, but they'll have that Darwin fellowship concept placed upon them. The other U.S. universities are Harvard, University of Louisville, Case Western, and
Montana,
and Colorado.
And last point, in terms of funding for the Institute, we sent out a proposal to the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation 2 weeks ago as the first proposal of many to try to sustain the infrastructure around the Institute.
Yes, Carla.
I was going to ask about the plan for sustained funding.
Currently, everybody working in this area is doing it in a pro bono fashion. Once we have funding in place to pay for a director of this Institute, we'll do a faculty-wide search for individuals to fulfill that. But it's basically we're looking at grants and donations and those sorts of things, so all soft money at this point.
And the upside is the funding for the fellowships has actually been the primary point of emphasis, and that's going very well. So sustaining that piece of it, I think we're very confident is not going to be problematic. The infrastructure around it is going to require a lot of proposals for the Institute.
gosh.
It's a good question, but I will have to brag. Both these gentlemen are sort of the entrepreneurs of the school in terms of starting new programs and keeping going. The reason it's with us today is because we had a regent last year try to create a center without abiding by policy 891. And so even though we respect these gentlemen, we love this idea, many of us, we want to make sure it goes through the Senate. So any other questions you have, lay it on them now. Yes.
What units are you looking at right now? And you're trying to think about how compassion is in the community.
Very broadly, I mean, essentially, as long as it's a PHP-granting entity, both sides of campus are available to have folks apply for that. And there's also very recently conversations with family and community medicine about potentially having one of those fellowships, one of their MD residents, to be able to pursue. So as broadly as possible, this will be our first year where we actually recruit applicants. So it's kind of one of these, we will see what the applicant pool looks like, and have had conversations about what that call will look like and how we will actually adjudicate between both the funding stream, which is again an international hub, and UNM, how that process will work in terms of getting
that. So
the
PhD
and
doctor
and
professionals?
Well, at least as of now, those three fellowships that have been named for PhDs, by definition of the donors who provided the funding for it. But if folks are successful in raising funding for other, you know, PA level, MA level, MD level, we're very open to that.
Yes, sorry.
The praise sounds as well. I'm just unsure about, let's get, you know, for private people, other than for compassion or whatever, as this is an institute, and they need to actually have that institute, and what's the benefit of that additional piece of infrastructure that's going to be?
Well, I think the upside is building it won't be a challenge, primarily because given that the Center for Social Policy has been approved, the infrastructure, the staffing, all of that is already in place. So it's not really, don't think of it as in terms of building a whole new enterprise. It's really just ensuring that we have some assurance to the donors that UNM is serious about this commitment. And for them, they were pretty straightforward that having a formal institute where it actually lives and breathes with UNM sends a lot of assurances to them that if they continue raising money, UNM, lack of putting it any differently, has some skin in that game.
Nora.
Yeah, I would, my only suggestion is that if you're looking at making it interdisciplinary, you might open up the language from PhD to terminal degree, because an MFA or a Master's
right.
of Architecture is actually a terminal degree.
Mm-hmm.
A number of professors here stop at that point. So if it's truly interdisciplinary, I would not make it interdisciplinary.
Okay, any other thoughts, questions, before we take a vote? You good? Okay, like a motion to approve the center, the establishment of a center or a compassion institute. Thank you. First, second. Thank you. All in favor? Let's have a show of hands, just because this is an important issue. Okay, thank you. Any negatives? Opposition, I mean, in the middle. Okay, thanks. The end of the day. Thank you, gentlemen. Thanks for waiting. I got them all three.
Got them all.
I got eight and nine and ten.
About,
yeah. We did it. We approved
two
of
that. Just making sure.
Yeah. Thank you, Gabriel.
Thank you, folks.
Thank you so much, guys. Okay. So I'm so sorry that we're a little late, but this is actually pretty good timing for us. So I'd like to introduce Julie Filizzetti and Lindsay Gold. They are from Isaacson Miller. Please, you come up and sit here if you don't mind. I have an unorthodox approach to having the group run. I think it'll be normally an issue. So Julie and Lindsay are some of the leads for Isaacson Miller, which is the search firm that brought us Garnet Stokes. So we are happy about them. President Stokes has had them now be our search firm for both the provost and the diversity, equity, inclusion. But as I wrote in my letter to you, these two ladies are not the leads on that. So if you have a general question about it, you could ask them. Otherwise, you'll have to go to a listening session for that. So my sense is that you could talk about the process a little bit. So you're representing right now to the Faculty mm-hmm. Senate, and they might have comments on what they're looking for. Does that
mm-hmm.
sound about
yes.
the right procedure?
Sure.
Okay, great. So
sure.
I turn it over then. Thank you.
Right. Thank you. And thank you all for having us here today. We are here yesterday and today. Our colleagues will be here actually tomorrow mm-hmm. to talk about the diversity at the Senate research. We are here for listening sessions, and so it really is about talking a little bit about the process and then listening to you in terms of what your hopes, dreams, and aspirations are for the position, for the university, and for the new purpose. we take what we learn and we then formulate what we call an opportunity and challenge profile. I should say we are going to augment our listening sessions today with a survey that will go out to the community, and you'll be able to fill in comments there in terms of what you think the opportunities and challenges are for the provost. That will also be an opportunity to suggest names of individuals that might be good candidates or that might know good candidates. So when we, after we develop the opportunity and challenge profile, we then work with the committee. Well, first off, we take it out and we go out into the marketplace and we try to find great candidates. And then we work with the committee to look at the qualifications and backgrounds and experiences of those candidates. We try to narrow it down to a set of finalists, and those finalists will hopefully appear sometime within the spring semester to visit with all of you as finalist visits, open forums, and those kinds of sessions. And so you will, at that point, be both selling them on the opportunity with your enthusiasm for their candidacy, as well as having the opportunity to weigh in on what you think some of their strengths are, as well as questions that you have. So that's generally the, and then obviously it is the president that, that takes all of this feedback. Is the one that to make the decision. And that process will be followed largely for both searches. We can certainly speak to our search, the photo search in more detail.
So questions on the process, how they find candidates perhaps? You know, someone asked the other day, do they have stable? That might be a question you'd be interested in hearing. You know, and that doesn't sound good, does it? It sounds very too heavy or something, right? Yeah. You clarify.
So I can tell you we have no candidates in mind right now. We're here to learn on what you're actually looking for, because with these learnings of the and what will be reflected in this opportunity and challenge profile, we'll be testing candidates' backgrounds to see if they've done it before. We think if they've done it before, maybe they can do it again. So think about what kind of your tangible measures of success are, because we'll be testing that candidate's background. Have we networked a lot on previous provost searches? We have. That doesn't mean that any of them will work for you. And so this is a, you know, unique place. We need to make sure that we have a pool that makes sense for you. So we will take suggestions from the community on where we should be looking. We will tap our networks. We'll have a research strategy. So we've already gotten a lot of feedback on where this person should be coming from. We've been hearing a lot about public universities and R1 institutions, so we will be looking in those places. We've also heard a lot about looking at HSIs as well, so we'll look at Hispanic serving institutions as well. But if you have ideas on where we should be looking, we'll look at that as well. So we'll do that, and then we'll do the typical advertisements as well. So we'll have a very broad outreach throughout this process, but of course you know this place the best, so your recommendations will be very helpful to us as we network.
But in answer to the stable question, you do have a cadre of people that you are aware of. You haven't picked one for the job, but you're not without resources, you know, yourselves, right? Christopher.
So we're hoping, we haven't established it because this is obviously getting all of the schedules with the committee and their meeting set, and but our hope is that somewhere around late March, early April is when we would have finalists come on board. At any point in the search, if we run into obstacles that we think would require us to delay the process a little bit, we face those obstacles with the committee and we say, what should we be doing? You know, we don't want to get to a place where, for example, it's very end of the semester and people don't have time to really process these candidates, et cetera. And so, you know, if we had to, we would extend it, but we're certainly hoping to have a provost this summer.
If you recall, we did extend the presidential search last year when it seemed frugal to do so. Okay, so Ruth and then Raj.
So I guess that leads me to the question about whether or not we're late CV and whether or not having somebody in the page role reduces our pool because people are not thinking about that anymore. I mean, what's your experience about when these kinds of calls were?
So we're very much in the window of provost searches starting. There are certainly some that are ahead of us, but some of them started last spring as opposed to this fall. Some have probably started this fall, and they're a little bit ahead of us. But it is amazing when you see the number of people that actually raise their hand for each individual search. It's really about this opportunity and the opportunity to be here with you. So there's sometimes people that I'm like, I want to be provost, and you're seeing you can't make a few searches. But a lot of times there's not a lot of overlapping pools even for those institutions. So we're not worried and concerned that we're not going to be able to get the right people for the search.
Gosh.
So do you present like every candidate to or you do some kind of screening of those and say, hey, this might fit you better, or how does it work?
So what I'll tell the committees, and sorry for those of you that have heard me say this, we view ourselves as staff to the committee. So our job as staff to the committee is to provide information to the committee in a well-organized and timely fashion so the committee themselves can make can spend their time making the decisions. So that means we'll do a lot of the first cut of, we'll do a lot of the recruiting of candidates. We'll also do a lot of review of people to say, we don't think they meet either the minimum qualifications or the, you know, what they're really looking for. We don't do that in a vacuum in the sense that we say to the committee, here's who we think are the most promising, but here are all the others you could certainly look at these. And anybody on that list, choices about where you think they should go. They say, spend more time with this person, we're happy to do that.
And we did do that with the president.
We did.
We pulled a few off and said, hey, that guy looks interesting or that gal looks interesting. Next question, Nancy.
I had a question about the search committee. In some cases it's public, in other cases it's not. And also, is there a standard form that is filled out by the search committee on conflicts of interest and how that will be managed? I know a lot of universities have one. We don't have one for search committees, so What's the best practice around that? Naming and making public who the search committee is and what the criteria is, and issues of diversity in terms of discipline, but also demographic diversity.
There is a website for the provost search, and what I'm not entirely sure is if, I don't know if it is right now a button that you just push, you may have to search for it, but I know that there's an intention to get it to be, you know, right there from the president, public president's website. It might actually be from executive searches on the president's website. So then the committee members are listed there. We did a confidentiality agreement with the committee members, and I'm trying to remember, it was a pretty extensive. I don't know if it identified conflicts.
It mentions that if we have one, I'm on the search committee, that we're meant to confess it. Like if, you know, James applies, I go, oh, I know that guy, you know. So that's the conflict of interest. And I don't know that Julie could speak to the constitution of the committee because the president constituted it. So,
but that's not public information.
No, it's on the website.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I can tell you. I'll get it to you later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if you search for provost search, provost executive or whatever.
She thinks it's on the website. If it's not, I can find it for you.
Other questions? So we're still talking about process. What I'm hoping we'll get to soon is, what are you looking for in a new provost? So anyone who wants to speak to that, either qualifications or, as we said, characteristics. This is the number two job in the university, and we would like to have one that stays, right? So let's help them help us. Lee, I can always count on you.
A billionaire would be nice.
A generous billionaire.
We didn't mean, yeah, that's right. Not just one. Good point. Ann, go ahead.
Well, I guess what I would like to hear from the Senate members is, what were some of those qualities about some of the provosts who haven't stayed that we went, oh, shoot, I can't believe that person is. What has worked well?
Well, actually, we did talk in the search about some of Shawi's characteristics since he was the most recent one.
Right.
But there may be other ones. The ones before were a long time and they weren't for a while. So,
okay. But particularly, Shawi, what made it?
What we liked about
what
him.
What
we liked,
right?
Okay.
I think it's often easy pick out what we don't
sure.
like, and I think it would be more helpful in recruiting to figure out what we
sure.
So doing that, but I also think that I always like to keep the focus on what we want to have happen next.
Mm-hmm.
So, and some of you have heard me say this, but you know, so 5 years from now,
yeah.
what will this person have accomplished
mm-hmm.
that you will all be really excited about?
Because
mm-hmm. I worry too much, you know, but certainly some of the qualities to be.
And I think that's
that
what
one.
She's saying. She's
mm-hmm.
saying that
like,
qualities
yes,
inform
he
you.
Some stuff
mm-hmm. yeah.
that
right.
had he stayed, I think in
right.
years
the redesigning of the university.
Got it.
Okay.
Right.
Five
so,
years.
Right.
how do we keep that momentum going as opposed to starting over? Mm-hmm.
So anyone besides Carla's phone want to weigh in on that? Anne, how about you? Did you have a thought about that?
No, I think that it's been too long since I was on the main side of campus, and I'm with the College of the School of Medicine, and so I think our relationship with the provost is different.
It is.
Right?
Well, what we said on the search committee the other day, I mean, I think I can say these positively, we would want someone who had the willingness and a good ability to interact with the chancellor,
right?
Because that's your most important
yes.
need, probably.
Right. Exactly.
So let me ask main campus it. A&S, you're the biggest college here. Education, what do we want? I mean, we couldn't shut up really on the search committee, so come on. But yes, another HSC. Okay.
So for me, definitely, you know, I think that collaborative spirit would be absolutely number one. Number two, I really believe that it would be, you know, forming that strategic plan for the future, right? Closely with Garner Stokes. And then just as a little caveat, my favorite thing about him was that I really appreciated his weekly address, you know, mm-hmm. so he gave there was transparency there. He provided reading lists. He provided this really compassionate email once. I don't recall which mass shooting it was, but it actually brought me to tears. And so I feel like he had the pulse of what was going on in the community at the time.
That's great.
And so for that, without even knowing the man, I felt that he really spoke for UNM.
I like that. Thank you. Lee, mm-hmm. go ahead, and then I'll get over.
So on the HSC side, there is what's called the core leadership group. Consists of Dr. Richards, Dr. Roth, and Dr. Larson, and the CFO, Christine Gates, and I think the associate counsel, maybe one or two others. It would be nice if there were another point of view represented within the core group, because they make all of the important decisions for the HSC. And the concept I would suggest is, could the provost be made part of that core group?
That's a great idea. Yeah. We should talk to Paul really about that.
Sort of have to.
Okay, great. Christopher, I think you had your hand then.
No.
You're actually not a senator.
Don't
right?
tell him it was my idea.
I can just give my comment to see.
Yeah, it's okay. I can give you my seat, but just because you raise it all the time, so I don't want to ignore you, but I got to get the senator.
Emily, don't tell him it was my idea.
I won't. Absolutely.
This is very broad. I mean, it's a broad characteristics. I think, you know, there's so much going on in the university. The provost often has to put on fires, and kind of a bureaucrat. And we need somebody who is also going to be able to speak to academic vision, which means broadly we need it. And that's one thing I think previous provost was able to do with the communicators somewhat, just talk to broader intellectual issues, being an academic leader as well as just somebody who's stuck in policy, stuck in doing quality or money or whatever. And that's the problem at UNM, broadly for most of the issues. And you get overwhelmed with the details. And you can't think about the future.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Sever, you're here from COG?
Thoughts
from COG?
Certainly.
And if there are any AFNT members that I don't know about. Mike Delaney, go ahead then.
Could you use the strongest characteristics of Tucker? Because he had walked through all the positions here at the UAM.
Yeah.
He'd been an assistant professor. He walked it all. Mm-hmm. So he really knew the kind of for faculty at UAM. And the other thing that I really appreciate about him is he was accessible. He didn't have to wait like 5 months to hear from him. I would email him, I would hear back from him almost right away. And his accessibility was critical, but it was accessibility without hierarchy. That was a critical factor.
Yeah,
success factor.
Yeah, thank you. Beautiful.
This is a little bit about process too, but I'm wondering what application materials you all get. I know that a lot of faculty researchers are studying how specific separate statements on diversity and
So generally, we once we identify these opportunities and challenges, we look at the people's backgrounds and experiences based on these opportunities and challenges. So there is something about, you know, increasing
diversity and making it more inclusive. It is about academic vision. We would be looking, talking with them about their experiences in those areas, and then we would also be asking them to write, most likely we'll ask them to write either an academic, a list of accomplishments, or some kind of letter that says that they are in speech to those.
We did discuss, in other words, asking specific questions that they could answer, right? But Finney and then Mike, yeah.
So I wanted to piggyback on your comment about vision. I think knowing where HSIs are headed nationally and looking at kind of curricularly and just academic vision about where we should and could be going as an institution. Creativity is, I think, extremely important. I mean, we're in a resource-challenged environment, which means that person should also be entrepreneurial, someone who can leverage the resources that we have to kind of foster the vision and the creativity that we want to see out of the programs. And to be a person who, on the national, we are a national institution, but we tend to sometimes think as if we are a state institution. Someone who has a vision that sees the incredible things that are going on in our faculty and can elevate our institution to that next level.
I would say thanks. And I would say, first of all, a commitment and experience to shared governance. And then the second would be also to think about what Christopher and Finn said, a real understanding and a commitment to what makes UNM and New Mexico special. I could see, you know, maybe resist the big name who might just get a typical sales pitch. And I would say I would be drawn more to maybe a rising star in a smaller university who can really express and communicate what makes New Mexico special and why they're attracted to New Mexico and what, you know, what makes this special in their eyes versus other opportunities. And I know that in my own search committee experience, there's a tension between the finding a deputy at a big-time R1 institution versus a rising star at a smaller institution. And we often look to the big names at the big-time universities, and sometimes we overlook the rising star, maybe a sitting provost at a smaller university. Well, this is the next step up. And if they can express that uniqueness that we have, I would favor that.
Great. Okay. Sever from Cobb, you have my chair.
The uniqueness discussion is also
Yes,
and just to echo that, because I think we have this huge tendency to gravitate towards national content, and it does not help us most times. Focusing on that person, whether or not they're from the state, but they can connect to what it is about New Mexico that.
And that may be our job to express that too, right? Okay. Someone could have the potential to connect and simply
right.
doesn't know it yet, right? Yeah, go ahead, Tracy.
So
we heard
that Dr. Stokes visited branch campuses on the listening forum, and something similar in photos would be wonderful. Someone who has a deep and understanding communications who recognizes the particular challenges of branch campuses and recognize that we're out there and we have a role in the system as well.
And you'll be happy to know Patrick Valdez, the CEO of Taos, is on the committee, and that's all he talks about.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm sure he'll broaden his viewpoint, but right now that's all he's talking about. Yeah, did I miss someone? I'm scanning. Jeffrey, did you have any thoughts? Because you had some questions the other day that I didn't know that they'd been answered. Okay. Going kind of thing? Yes, Lee, go ahead.
Given his incredible success as the former president of NMSU, I would actually seek out Gary Carruthers and ask him if he might be interested. He's an exceptionally good president for them. And he's extremely well connected politically.
And he's looking for a job.
And he may be looking for a job.
No, he is looking for a job.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he has, like I said, he has connections and he wields a certain amount of power within the state and could really be
That's a
an addition
idea.
To us.
Yes.
I'm going to just build on qualities, characteristics, just somebody. It's sort of like Joey, that is just intellectually curious, mm-hmm. you know, and is would characterize themselves as a student, you know, and a learner, mm-hmm. and that they, you know, cherish that. They cherish the role of the learner.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one, you guys. Mm-hmm. They're all good. So we want the perfect person.
Of course.
And feel like some kind of obnoxious personal ad, you know. You've got to be everything and expect nothing from me.
And
but, yeah.
Rich also.
Yeah, and rich. Now you sound like my cousin.
Generous.
And any pointed questions you might ask to elicit a different, you know, sort of thinking?
What are your hopes for the students?
For the graduate.
We get more of it.
Yeah, they're proud to go to UM. I like that. Yes.
And then they stay here and they lead and they're entrepreneurs and they're creatives and they're
have happy lives.
They're in Mexico.
Yes.
They're not allowed to take a job.
No, go ahead.
I guess you can with all the students are at various innovation spaces and the institutions position at the science. So the students have actually organized themselves to educate faculty about what to do with other students that are on campus. So I think our students are incredibly tuned in the moment.
Yes.
I think they're fearless, and I think they are taking great risks in this institution at this moment. And so I would love to talk about this in some way, what it is like to look at this and be focused. I don't know if we ever have the potential for the sanctuary campus. I find it embarrassing that we're this close to the border.
Mm-hmm.
We're not a sanctuary campus, but this is a campus that can help us put 10% of students on.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we just need to be real. We're this provost and this not my family, but we're all here today. It's a institution and a very particular group of people that we serve. I mean,
that's a great point. We should bring that up at the search. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did that inspire anyone else?
Mm-hmm.
What was that I even?
Ditto. Yeah, what about in terms of like working with student affairs, in terms of thinking about how you can better support your students too, or are there, could you use some more assistance in terms of figuring out like a student in crisis, you know where they should go, or how to handle things, you know, more proactively, or just around that student success piece of, do you know how to leverage other offices right now in your work to make sure students can feel supported on a variety of places on the campus?
Yeah, go ahead.
I remember from previous stints on ops that it was talked about weaknesses within the academic counseling aspect.
Advisor. We've been working on that a lot, yeah. I mean, over
so
the years.
Someone who's committed to really strengthening that.
I'm just going to say, I don't know that the bent toward student affairs is the most important quality for me in the provost. Certainly mm-hmm. someone who realizes he's leading students as well as faculty. But for me, if the academic programs are working, then your associate provost should be able to take care of the student affairs part. I remember having seen in other searches in my life, candidates who would come only from a student affairs background, and sometimes I felt that wasn't enough of a leadership experience.
Yeah.
So that's the only reason I have a red flag when you say that. You may not
need
it that way.
More just making sure, like if somebody, of course, had all the money in the world, you know, what would you do in terms of, you know, building up the support systems?
We would compensate our faculty adequately.
Mm-hmm.
So someone
sure.
who recognizes the worth of faculty.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing them. But yeah.
So in terms of like academic advising, it sounds like there's been
yeah, we have things. Been talking about that a long time. Not saying it's perfect, but that's been a priority for about 5-6 years. They've been talking about
it.
Yeah, the DOJ,
good
right? Good point. Someone familiar with, or at least willing to handle the DOJ reports, Title IX issues. Yeah, Kenny.
This may be fairly obvious, but our state, there are 2 million people in the whole state,
mm-hmm.
and so. It's not uncommon to walk out in the hallway and bump into a legislator. So someone who is able to navigate at the state level is going to be able to get into that political arena and navigate it and have that kind of savvy to have the kind of gravitas
mm-hmm.
to do that. I don't think that a lot of provosts around the country would be as involved in the legislative process as our provost is, because of just the demographics of the state. So someone who has that experience would be very important.
Let's talk a little bit about, you know, the fact that perhaps university doesn't tell its story as well as it should.
Yes.
And so some of the great work that's being done across the university isn't as recognized. So the national, international recognition piece in terms of figuring out how to get that, is that something
hugely
important to you all?
We talked about that a lot in here. The previous president, President Frank, had interesting initiatives, but, you know, offices in different countries. But I welcome that. I think that that's what we need to get ourselves on the map, that they do not know who we are in other countries. And they should. Mm-hmm. You know, they should know. Yes, the two of you. you
so
fight amongst yourselves who goes first.
So there's this huge branding effort going on, mm-hmm. and I don't know what their activities have been other than changing our logo. But, you know, if they are actively trying to promote us to other countries or whatever under this branding label, certainly you should talk to them about what a provost could do to help them, what sort of person they would like.
I think we had students who left. So I think somebody who's like really sad and able to function in a competitive discussion climate and address that directly, because I think that's something that we could talk about internationally and not really discuss sometimes in France, and how to build relationships with countries that may not have the same children, which is hugely helpful for us.
We have branch campuses. We also have other programs that serve students around the state, and as interesting, you've heard of what we try to do at MS to serve not just our local community, but students from all over the state. How we do that has looked, we've shrunk our footprint a little bit around the state in the past few years.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, dealing with some of those tensions between how we serve the broader population in the state and diverse communities, rural communities, less resourced communities, in our highly constrained resource environment,
mm-hmm.
I think there are some things that, you know, our next provost needs to be prepared to do.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of outreach issues, right?
How do we prioritize and serve our communities?
Okay.
I think we're just about a year.
Yeah. No, good.
So,
thank you. So, Jan, one last question.
General question about diversity and inclusion. Is tomorrow the only listening session?
There's one at 8 in the morning for the executive cabinet, which we decided was open, I think. But is there another one? That's a horrible
time.
If you, Jan, give me a minute. I got an email yesterday, and I'll try and find it for you.
I think it's at like 10:30, but that's
fine. We will encourage our colleagues. We're trying to mirror the search processes to some extent. So even if there's not listening sessions, we'll try to see if there's other ways to collect data.
Because that's a very important. Okay, I've got it right here, guys. Let me see which one is. Does it say? Oh, this is Provost and BVP.
Yeah.
Search Listening Center. Is this for?
That's just us. If it's all it's us.
Oh, yeah. So then I don't have any information. I'm sorry.
So we do have. So we will have opportunities for. We can leave this with you, Pamela,
yeah,
and you can give these.
Okay, I will.
Okay, that'd be great. So we'll
have great.
Yeah, so we're pulling together a survey for the campus community with the help of the search committee and our search chair. So look out for the survey. This is really similar to this session here. What does this provost need to accomplish in the next 1, 3, 5 years? There's other things that are going to be on that survey as well. So those that couldn't attend this session or haven't attended our other sessions, please encourage them to fill out that survey. Because the more we hear from folks, the more we know about the place when we're selling this opportunity, but also telling the truth about what this person is going to be doing, because we think it's very important to get the story right to them on what this person needs to accomplish. So the more people that can provide feedback to us, the better. So please encourage them to fill that out once it goes out as well. And then there'll be a search website too, a way to, if you go onto that search website, you can be redirected to us, or our contact information is on these papers here. So if you want to reach out to us at any time to provide feedback for the search or candidates or anything, please feel free to reach out at any time, and especially in the next few months as we start vetting candidates as well.
We do understand how important the connection to New Mexico is, so make it a point to think very long and hard about people that you have interacted with over the years that maybe have had some interaction with the University of New Mexico. PhD students from way long ago that have now moved into academic administration, who knows? But think really hard about people that might have had those connections then, we'll figure out where they are. If you know who they are, we'll figure out where they are and how to get them. So, but that connection is important, and you can help us identify those folks. Yeah. Thank you all.
Thank you so much for coming. I appreciate it. Sorry,
I didn't know I was going to hand you.
Hey, there are some great sweets and coffee back there you can get.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, please. If I were seeing that, I'd be way back. There we go. We have actually one. Wow, I almost made it. Nora's got one already. Okay. Am I good? I think we're done. Yeah, I just got a few. See you in the next one. Everybody got one? Okay, so very quickly, any new business? And there's none from my end, so if you all have some, let me know. No? Public comments, I meant to ask that, but we never have time for, so I'm not asking for it normally, but okay. Motion to adjourn?
Second.
Yay, all in favor? Have a great month, guys. I'm getting a snack, though.
Okay.
Out of my way.